Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I hope to open the conversation about working parents a bit. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier, to find out how they balance being a dad with a successful career. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, Duck Hunt, and welcome to podcast number 254. I am your host, Chris Tilley, and this week I'm joined by Gav.
Hello.
And Daniel.
What's up?
How are we doing, guys?
Daniel.
You prefer Daniel, though. I forget sometimes.
You prefer Daniel.
I'm not
a fan of either.
Yeah, it's just because we've got a Dan. We've got a very famous Dan in the office anyway. So
yeah.
There was a lot of confusion when I first started.
Really?
Anyway,
they're very similar.
Let's not get bogged down in monikers.
In the details. Inside baseball.
Let's kick off with what we've been up to this week. Has anyone been doing anything exciting?
I was late for work because I managed to get Fleetwood Mac tickets. I don't know if that's exciting. Probably not.
Yeah, it's exciting.
Exciting for me.
Yeah,
he knows the demographic already. I've been playing Rogue a lot. We'll talk about that later, but that's just my week, just playing Assassin's Creed Rogue, which turned up at the beginning of the week. I'm trying to get through that as quickly as possible so we can get a review on the site. It's good. It's got ships.
When are we going to talk about it?
At the end?
Ah, I want to hear more about it now.
Yeah,
are you having fun?
Yeah, so on the running order, it's down as Ass Creed Rogue.
I did that. That was me.
That'd be a different game. It's really good, actually, because Unity's, I think, come out to kind of a bit of a mixed reception. We gave it 7.8, saying, it's a good game.
I can't believe they've released in the same week.
Yeah, it's been blighted by lots of technical problems. Quite funny
ones,
amusing
yeah.
technical problems. Like, there's a touching scene right at the beginning of the game where your father, and your new character, Arno, is a young child, and he's in the Palace of Versailles, and your father tells you to sit down in this chair and wait for him, and he gives you his pocket watch, and it's a lovely touching moment, and something bad happens to him. But in some of the people's footage online is your father has no face and he just has a pair of floating eyeballs.
Oh, no.
Which is traumatic for different reasons.
When I think fathers and sons and pocket watches, I think of Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why his face fell off.
Yeah.
He got startled. So this is the other game, and I think Ubisoft didn't send out advanced copies for reviewers, so a lot of sites don't have reviews up. And I think everyone thought, oh, this is really bad. You know, that means they're trying to bury the game, when people don't get invited to screenings of movies.
Yeah.
But I actually think it's a kind of, maybe so far, I think it might be for a different reason. I think they just want all the focus on Unity, and it didn't want Unity, the big expensive next generation, the game that's going to reinvigorate the series for the next 5-10 years, to be upstaged by this PS3 and Xbox game.
But it's actually pretty decent. The same week.
I know, that's the weird thing, because I think originally they were meant to be spaced out a bit, and then there was delayed. I wonder if Unity got delayed because of the technical problems, and then they all got bunched and they're like oh crap, we've got Far Cry next week, and then we've got The Crew in a couple more weeks, just get it out. But it seems, I imagine a lot of people, I don't know this for to be true, but I imagine Rogue will come out on next-gen consoles or current-gen consoles at some point. But it's a really pretty game, even though it's a bit rough around the edges, and it plays like the greatest hits of Assassin's Creed. So it's set after, so you visit loads of locations that you have in previous games. It plays like a sequel to Black Flag, so you've got the boat.
That's
you
good.
Can sail around. You can go to the Arctic Circle. It's very pretty. You can hunt
polar bears.
Because
there's no boats in Unity, is there?
There's no boats in Unity at all.
I'm out.
But so it's real. It's an interesting game. There's a lot to talk about. Because it almost reminds me of Lost a little bit. Because Assassin's Creed's been going for like 7-8 years now.
Yeah.
And obviously, initially, they're just like, let's do a game here, let's do a game here. And this is a game that's trying to make, impose some kind of sense or order onto the chaos of just like making those snap second decisions.
Okay.
Like, oh, let's do a game set here. So it's kind of re-examining all the games that went before it, because you play an assassin who turns bad, who breaks bad, and like goes around killing other assassins. So it's a game that's kind of re-evaluating history.
But that hasn't happened to you yet.
It has now.
It has, okay, cool.
But it's actually, that's the coolest thing about it, is the story.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And we'll have a review up in the coming week.
Hope so.
Hopefully.
I think we're aiming for, probably for the beginning of next week, because I don't want to rush through it, because I feel like you can get burnt out by games, and then you think it's, because you're trying to meet a deadline, you're like, I'm not enjoying this anymore, when it's not the game's fault.
Yeah. Quite agree. Well, I've been to the BFI to see something quite interesting this week, which is an exhibition about Star Wars, namely A New Hope. They have been in touch with Anne Skinner, who was the continuity supervisor on the first movie, and she's got her notated script with all her Polaroids that she took over the course of the shoot that no one's ever seen, and she's given them to the BFI to put an exhibition on. So we'll have a feature on the site about it, but I went down and spoke to one of the curators down at the BFI who talked me through all the pictures and all the scripts, and it was really interesting. Deleted scenes, changed dialogue, characters that never appeared in the final movie.
Oh, cool.
If you like Star Wars, it's a really interesting treasure trove.
And is this part of the wider BFI sci-fi season?
Yeah, it's Days of Fear and Wonder, which is running till January. And yeah, have you caught anything? Obviously, I went to Flash Gordon.
I've bought some tickets. So I think a lot of it is yet to kick off. I think it's kicking off this month proper.
Yeah.
I've got tickets to see David Cronenberg's The Fly on November the 28th.
Awesome.
Which I'm really looking forward to, because I've not seen that for years.
Yeah.
I remember the first time I saw that, just how blown away I was by, you know, it's based on a B-movie.
Yeah.
And then he's taken it, David Cronenberg, and done something distinctly his own about it. Mm-hmm. And there's like really weird dialogue in that movie, like you want to dip into the plasma pool and re-emerge reborn, and like loads of really weird, trippy dialogue. And also Penis in the Jar.
Yeah.
And it's a full-on tragedy. Like, it's really sad at the end. Like, I did rewatch it a couple of years ago, and it's
a beautiful love story. One of my favourite scenes, I think, score is by Howard Shore, and there's a scene where she goes and visits Seth for the last time before his transformation, his descent into disease, and he says, "I love you," but he tells her to go, because she goes, "Why don't you want me here?" He's saying, "I love you, but if you stay, I will hurt you."
Yeah.
And he can't help it.
I've had to say that to a couple of girls before, and it's not comfortable for anyone, really, so that's not good. And we're going to go and see 2001, aren't we, Dad?
Yeah, that's good.
Although the thing is, we're, I've said it up here before, the reason I've never seen it is I've been waiting to see it when I didn't want to see it as a kid. Yeah, because I had it on video when I was a kid, and I tried a couple of times, thought, no, this is boring, I'm going to wait till I'm older. And then I've been waiting for the right occasion on a big screen with a live orchestra or on the IMAX something. And now I'm worried we're going to be seeing it in a screening room. I'm really concerned about this, because it's not at the actual BFI, it's at their offices, which I haven't been to near us. So I might have waited all this time and I'll be watching it just on like a big TV.
In someone's office on the TV.
I don't think it's quite that bad, but it won't be on the giant screen like
it's
I was
like
hoping.
One of those TVs you have at school that's rolled on in a big stand.
But I've got to see it, because we're going to be interviewing maybe some people from
print.
I don't know at the moment.
I love the fact that as a child you were like, do you know what? I'm gonna wait. I'm gonna enjoy this more.
No,
as an adult,
I was quite mature as a film watcher as a kid. I watched some films that were too advanced for me, and I got upset about it. I got really annoyed that I didn't understand Blade Runner and hated it, because I genuinely thought I was watching a Han Solo movie.
Right. Yeah,
when I put the video in. I thought this was a new Han Solo movie.
spin-off.
It was only 5 years ago.
Did you ever have that experience watching a film that was beyond your years?
Yeah, but it's not as good a film, but Interview with a Vampire.
Okay.
Like, I was way, way too young to be watching that, I think. I was just on the sort of cusp of, like, I don't know how old I would have been, but really, really way too young to be watching it. And because I loved, like, American Werewolf in London, like The Lost Boys, I thought, oh, it's going to be like that.
Yeah.
And I was like, what is this film? Like, didn't really understand the sort of, like, I just didn't understand it, basically, what was going on. I sort of similar thing, like, I felt quite frustrated by it for the same reason that I thought it was going to be Lost Boys, but with Brad Pitt sort of thing, and it weren't.
I got burnt by Scorsese as well.
Okay.
Because when I was maybe 10, 9 or 10, I watched Goodfellas and loved it. No, I must have been 12.
I was going to say 9 or 10.
I must have been 12, because that was the age I was when it came out. And loved it so much that I went and got my dad to hire out Mean Streets and Raging Bull.
Yeah.
And they were just way beyond my years.
Oh, yeah, if you see Raging Bull, because Goodfellas, there's something immediately exciting about it.
Yeah, exactly.
I think I watched that when I was 12, 13 on Channel 4.
And you can follow
that quite easily.
Yeah, I'm watching this going, I'm not meant to be watching this, and this is bloody brilliant. Yeah. This is amazing.
Yeah, I remember my friends and I calling it raging bullshit. Oh, I didn't know what I was talking about, did I?
I wrote some my GCSE coursework on Goodfellas. I did a film review on Goodfellas.
Awesome.
It's 18.
We should stick it.
We still got that?
Yeah, probably. Someone
you have to put that up.
We should stick it up on the side.
I'll see if I'll find it.
There's a documentary just gone on Netflix in the States about Henry Hill, actually, about it's all about the plot that actually got Jimmy, they call him Jimmy Conway in the film, don't they? Yeah. But he's not called Jimmy Conway in real life. But that got him arrested, and it was all to do with college basketball, betting on college basketball.
Oh, really?
And they totally messed it up, and none of them made any money out of it. And that's what it was like. It was like getting Al Capone on tax evasion.
Yeah, right,
they got Jimmy on this stupid and
insignificant.
It's interviews with the basketball players now. They were kids at the time.
Wow.
And they just talked to the wrong people, messed with the wrong guys, and suddenly they were in a lot of trouble and had to throw games.
That's on Netflix now.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, okay, a couple of weeks ago, I think it.
Netflix is doing amazing with documentaries at the moment.
Yeah, well, I love the sports documentaries that they do in the States. The 30 on 30. Yeah.
Is that becoming like the default distribution platform for documentaries? Because obviously theatrical is not a good home for documentaries usually.
Yeah. Netflix. I don't know. That's what I'm watching a lot of documentaries on there. I'm catching up on Errol Morris ones that I hadn't seen before.
Yeah.
Feels like more and more stuff is just going direct to Netflix.
Yeah, I watched them. I didn't even know about it until Netflix. The Battered Bastards of Baseball the other day. Kurt Russell, Russell's dad. Oh, my God. Such a good film. But I didn't know anything about it until I was like, oh, what's that? Checked it out. It
Awesome. They've got some good sports stories coming out of the States. Their sports lend themselves well to celluloid.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. If you like rubbish American sports films, like Undefeated.
That's your thing,
Undefeated
isn't
it? Is amazing, yeah.
They're not rubbish. Some of them are rubbish.
Yeah.
Anyway, should we talk about some news? Mm-hmm. That's about five tangents we've gone on there, which is how I like to start a podcast, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
Informal.
Dan, I believe you have the first
piece. I do. So this week, one of my most anticipated games of the year is Batman Lego 3 Beyond Gotham. Has come out. It's out in the UK today, when the podcast comes out on Friday.
Right, yeah.
It's out in America already, so people have blitzed through the game, got to the end, and usually in the last few Lego games there's been a teaser or a trailer at the end that tells you what the next one's going to be. And apparently at the end of Batman Lego 3, Batman and Robin are climbing up the side of a building and you see a dinosaur and you hear a snippet of the Jurassic Park theme. So we knew already, it was let slip early in the year, that Universal have signed a contract with Lego to make Jurassic Park sets for the new movie. Chris Pratt let that slip, I think, on Empire. And they've confirmed that now. And it seems like they're going to make a Lego tie-in game.
That'd
so
be
what
amazing.
I really hope is, like the Star Wars games, it'll be structured. So it won't be just based on Jurassic World. It'll be the first three films.
Yeah, I mean, that would be...
Which would make sense, because that's where you're going to get enough material to play around with.
And that nostalgia. And a lot of the characters.
See, this is the thing, though. The Lego games are really good. Like, I really like the Marvel game because you've got loads of characters to draw on. The new DC game, essentially it's a DC game, not a Batman game. It's got loads and loads of characters from Swamp Thing to Wonder Woman. The only thing is with the other Lego games, like the Indiana Jones one, you're like unlocking Swordsman number 3.
That's what you would be like with Jurassic Park.
A little bit with Jurassic Park. I think you're probably going to have 15 to 20 iconic characters at a push.
Vince Vaughn.
But I suppose you could have a lot of dinosaurs to play with.
Exactly, yeah.
And that's what
they're the iconic characters,
and
aren't
some of the cars and vehicles are quite iconic in Jurassic Park, so that can maybe alleviate some of that kind of pressure on having 150 characters.
But
Lego Vince Vaughn, like you say. Lego Julianne Moore.
Can you kill the kids early on? Just be done with them.
Really awkward grown-up Lex and Tim.
So that's news going to make you happy then, Dan.
I just want to play as... I'll be really good. I can already imagine the kind of humour that'll... Because they usually use the actual dialogue from the movie, which would be really amusing to see like little Lego Samuel Jackson saying, hold on to your butts. And then if his arm can fall off.
Yeah.
So that's really exciting.
If we haven't got a piece up about this potential game on the site, I think you should write one.
Just write basically what this game should be. I know you've probably made 80% of it. Yeah.
Well, we've done that, haven't
Here's your design document.
We did that with the movie, and we weren't far off with a lot of things, weren't we?
Yeah,
you did it.
I said way before anything was announced, I said, it's got to go back to the original park. I'd like to see it up and running.
I reckon Colin was probably listening.
Yeah.
Reading.
I don't know how I'm going to be able to handle watching Jurassic World. Like, I think I'm just... It's the same month I'm 30, and I think it's going to be too much of an emotional experience that month, I think. I'm going to have to, like, go see it by myself really quietly.
I think I want to go see it with my mum and basically recreate the conditions in which I saw the original Jurassic
World. No, I'd really like
to
do that. I'd like to do that. That's why I wanted to go and see Dumb and Dumb with my brother, but I can't now. Anyway, it's not supposed to be very good. That's sad. And more sad news coming from me. I was actually choked up when I was writing this. Tarantino's talking about retiring. I don't know what I'll do with a world without Tarantino movies to look forward to. So they're normally kind of my most excited moment of the year watching really? One of his films. I mean, I don't, at the end of him I'm like, oh, didn't like that one. Didn't like that one as much as Reservoir Dogs, not like the other ones. But
so you've basically had that experience since Paul
Reservoir Dogs. Yeah, I still get excited. It's not like Shyamalan though, where they just get progressively worse. Like there's always interesting stuff.
Something good in every single one of his films. Yeah. Like I love Django. Like I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah.
Were you not a fan of Django?
No, I did. Inglourious Basterds I didn't like as much as I wanted to like it. But to be honest, I think I've actually not seen... the version I've seen isn't the one that was released. So yeah.
Really?
Apparently, yeah, I saw a really early cut of it. And I think maybe it's better than I saw. So maybe I should watch that one again.
Yeah, I liked Django until we had to do a tweet along for it. And then ended up hating it because I had to do a tweet along for 3 hours. I hate this film.
With Jamie Foxx, though.
Yeah.
Kind of. But he was sitting with you?
Jamie Foxx's assistant.
Well, let's pretend he was.
Okay, yeah. How do you tweet? Like, the thing is, how are you tweeting? Like, it's quite a harsh film in places. Like, yo, yeah, they're just beating up. They're beating someone to death now.
Lol.
Just remember to use
the hashtag.
Okay.
I can't remember what we said. I'm sure that mine were the best tweets, though.
I think I started off really well in the first 15 minutes going, oh, this is zing. Zing. Yeah. And after 2 hours in, I'm like, oh, shit, then.
This was a mistake.
So it's still available on Blu-ray.
Tarantino's been at the American film market doing quite I think the thing that happens there regularly but doesn't normally get covered. But for him this is a big thing. He showed up with his cast to try and convince foreign sales agents to buy The Hateful Eight.
Okay.
Obviously there's a huge bidding war around it. People want, you know, his films are making more and more money each time out the gate. But he is being very strict about how he wants it screened. He wants it to be like an old-time 70mm movie where it plays for like 3 weeks in maybe the biggest cinema in a town and then moves out. Or he's got all these ideas that he's trying to push through, kind of like extending on what Chris Nolan's done.
So
with
he just wants to extend the experience to the way that people watch and consume the movie. He wants to have control of that.
He wants to make it an event. He wants to stop people watching them at home on their iPad, their iPhone. And it's kind of, you know, Nolan, I think if you were screening 70mm, you got Interstellar a day or two before, I think, in some places. So he was out there. He brought all the cast along. And it was basically him pitching his film and then meeting with all the... And it was fun, interesting. He was like talking directly to all the different companies who've released previous films of his, trying to like figure out who was the best, what was the best way to go.
I quite like that.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I hope they filmed some of that. That'd be really, really interesting to watch. I'm sure it's all be like.
I thought that because Deadline wrote up a lot of it. They hosted the Q&A, but I was thinking, what a shame this. I can't watch this because I'd be really interested. Because also he had Kurt Russell with him, Sam Jackson chipping in.
I'm all for like stunts as well. Like I've watched quite a few documentaries about William Castle, all the stuff he used to do, like the flying skeletons. And I remember when I was about 11 or 12, it was one of the first times I went to the cinema on a Saturday afternoon with a bunch of my mates from school, and we went to see the Brendan Fraser, the first Mummy film. And it was a packed screening in a converted church cinema in Blackburn. And midway through the film, somebody dressed as a mummy from the staff ran through the audience, and it was brilliant because it felt like that scene in It where the kids are watching I Was a Teenage Werewolf. It felt like felt like I was watching a movie in 1950s America.
Yeah,
it was really cool.
I always thought at the end of Spice World the Spice Girls should have come out every screening and done Wannabe just for each and every screening.
That'd have been incredible.
You could probably get them to do that now.
Probably
now,
definitely.
I do like the idea of like extended, like have you guys seen Ghost Stories, like the theatre production, like because there, I think it was the second run of that when he moved from Hammersmith to like one of their main theaters.
Yeah, in West End.
The entire theater is done out in sort of, and as soon as you walk through the door, that's when your experience starts. And like, I'd love more cinemas to take on like that. Picture houses are pretty good at doing that.
Yeah, do themed evenings.
But Tarantino also talked about the end of his career. He said, I don't believe you should stay on stage until people are begging you to get off. I like the idea of leaving them wanting a bit more. I do think directing is a young man's game, and I like the idea of an umbilical cord connection from my first to my last movie. I'm not trying to ridicule anyone who thinks differently, but I want to go out while I'm still hard. I like that I...
you love
classic Tarantino. It's classic Tarantino. I like that I will leave a 10-film filmography, and so I've got two more left to go after this.
Cool.
Which confused me because I never understand what is official and what isn't in his filmography. Do Kill Bill count as one? Does Death Proof, does Grindhouse?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm all very confused. But he's saying that he's got two more after Hateful Eight.
Yeah.
He then kind of goes on to say he's not ruling it out and like it depends how he feels and if he's got a good idea. He has said that for a long time though, that he's not going to go on doing this forever.
No.
But
I do like the idea of like going out on a high. I watched again on the weekend the LCD Sound System film, Shut Up and Play the Hits, and like there's a really awesome documentary. And like when he's talking about going out, and they're just like, people are like, why are you doing this now? Like, but he's like, I'm going out on a massive high. Like, nobody gets to control how their sort of their career ends.
Yeah.
We're controlling it. Like, I don't know. There's something really quite powerful about that.
And it would be amazing if he's got this 10 film filmography that's so consistent. You know, Death Proof is his only out and out flop.
Yeah.
Jackie Brown is the one that people didn't really like at the time, but everyone seems to like now. Yeah. And it's like, there's nothing that's really been, you know, it's kept at this amazing level all the way through.
Varied as well.
And I've got no reason to think that the more I read about this film, I've got no reason to think it's not going to be awesome as well.
Can you imagine if the last one is just like Brendan Fraser, like rom-com? He's just like, yeah, I'm just going to do this one. Like, well,
I want to do a really rubbish film before I end.
And, you know, he's spent also the last 20 years talking about making sequels to all his films. He's never made a sequel as well.
Yeah.
But no, I like the fact that he just hasn't done it. And there'd be so much money to be made if he had done the Vega Brothers or, you know, the Kill Bill 3 or whatever, with the daughters, but no, he's not having any of it.
Let's hope he doesn't go out on a sequel then.
No, I don't think he will at this point.
Okay.
He's talked about doing a sci-fi, hasn't he? But Kurt Russell did, when he'd finished this long speech, Kurt Russell did follow up with turning to the audience and saying, you don't actually believe this shit, do you?
It's like Steven Soderbergh.
You're still
making films though.
Kevin Smith and Steven Soderbergh have retired a lot.
Yeah.
Although Soderbergh's on telly now, isn't he? He's doing the Nick. I mean, Kevin Smith's films, by all accounts, have gotten really bad. I quite like Clerks 2, but apparently Tusk is terrible. And this one with his door in.
Yeah.
So what's happening? He's making Clerks 3 and then he's ending. Is that
well? He's doing this one at the moment with Johnny Depp's daughter and his daughter playing like almost like young Clerks.
What's it called? Yoga Twins or something?
Trojans, I think. Okay. I don't know. But it just sounds bad.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, we'll take that with a pinch of salt, Tarantino. Have we got another bit of news?
Yes, we've got the Warcraft stuff. So last weekend was BlizzCon, and which is Blizzard's, the people who make World of Warcraft, sort of like massive festival for all their fans that they do every year. And it gets massive, bigger and bigger every year. Like Metallica closed it out this year with a performance, which is incredible. I was sort of like emailing like tentatively around PRs as soon as I get Metallica. They're going, you taking any journalists out this year? Like, we could go really big on it this year, but nothing. Didn't get anything back, unfortunately. But Duncan Jones was there sort of talking about his Warcraft movie, and he gave away loads of posters. Like, he was like showing loads of posters. It's going to be a Horde versus the Alliance thing, which is the first time I think we found that out, like a bit more plot details and things like that. It was also like character posters and stuff like that they released. Like, it was a huge, huge thing. And for something that's been so closely guarded, to just go out and then spunkle this information.
It's cool. Like, it's their own platform. They can control it. Like,
exactly,
You're the man in the know, though. And you can't say anything, can you?
I'll just keep shtum for now. Yeah, it's frustrating because obviously I knew all this information.
Oh, really?
And I really wanted us to debut on IGN, but I guess they decided BlizzCon was a bigger deal.
Yeah.
I'm surprised, actually, it didn't get more traffic, though, this announcement, when we stuck it up on the site. But yeah, they announced pretty much everything that I know character-wise. There might be a couple that they haven't announced there, okay, but I can't say anything about.
Yeah.
But yeah, so who's playing what, then?
Well, it's pretty big, actually. Like, Ben Foster is in it. I really, really like Ben Foster. Then Dominic Cooper is playing King Lane. Like, that's one of the main ones. I interviewed Dominic Cooper about when Need for Speed was doing the rounds. I don't think he's a huge gamer, but...
No, he's not at all.
No, yeah.
He was better at Need for Speed than Aaron Paul. Paul, he was rubbish.
Really?
From
when I spoke to him, he's really excited about doing it. And he's really excited about working with Duncan Jones. Clancy Brown as Black Hand. That's a really, really big one. Although, no character poster for him. Just his smiling face. And Paula Patton as Garona is like one of the main ladies. But I mean, it's a pretty decent cast. Like, quite...
Yeah.
They've been working on it a while, and it's not coming out for a while. I don't know...
I think like the human hero is played by Travis Fimmel, who people know from Vikings, who looks the part.
Yeah.
That's a character called Lothar. And then I think the kind of the lead villain of the piece is played by Toby Kibble and Duolan. He's the leader of the Horde.
Yeah.
But I can say what they've said here. So they're very much a big reason that Duncan wanted to make the film is to change the script from what Sam Raimi's script was, where it was good versus evil, where here he's very much trying to make a movie that is, you can see both sides of the argument.
Okay,
so it's the first time the orcs and the humans meet each other.
Yeah.
And you should feel sympathy for both sides. It's interesting, actually, because they were, I went and visited the set and they were telling me these things, and it was just before I saw Dawn of the Planet of the Apes,
right,
which is a very similar thing where you're supposed to be able to see both sides and understand sides of the fight. And Toby Kibble's actually in both of them, playing like the supposed villain who sometimes you can actually understand where he's coming from.
Mm.
So yeah, I mean, are you excited for this?
I'm a huge World of Warcraft fan. I mean, this is a lot different to World of Warcraft. It's based on sort of earlier games and things like that, but I don't know. I'm just not into that world anymore. Like, I'm excited for it because it's Duncan Jones, and I'll definitely go see it because of that. But as like a, you know, I've been burnt by video games movies for so many years now. Like, and I sort of, I really, really want it to be good, but, and I like what you're saying is like, I really like that. I love that idea of being able to see sort of both sides, but whether or not you can do it, because that's what the entire game is built around, this huge universe. Can you make that into a 2-hour thing? I don't know.
Yeah.
We're approaching another age, like another generation of video game adaptations.
Here. Yeah.
Like, we had the first cycle, it was pretty dire.
Yeah.
Mm.
Mortal Kombat's, the Street Fighters.
Whoa. Mortal Kombat's a good one.
Maybe the sequels.
Yeah.
But we've got, you know, the Assassin's Creed movie, the Splinter Cell movie, this. There's another clutch on the horizon.
Yeah, I mean, I had high hopes for Prince of Persia was the one I thought was going to be the first good one, and it just didn't work.
No.
I've got a lot of hopes pinned on this one. Everything I saw suggested that this is going to be a good movie.
But it's got a really good, interesting director at the helm.
Yeah.
So that's more than anything for me.
Someone who really cares as well.
Yeah.
Someone who really loves video games more than they like movies, in fact. But also someone who understands that, you know, these won't work by adapting a video game.
Yeah.
You just got to start at the beginning, collaborate with the people at Blizzard, you know, really get them heavily involved in the story that you're telling, and... Yeah, not think about it. Not, you know, like, you've got to make a whole... You can't worry too much about the game fans, which sounds awful, but you've just got to think about a good movie with a good story.
Yeah.
You know, Peter Jackson couldn't worry too much about annoying Lord of the Rings fans by changing certain things, and he just had to make a film that works. Yeah.
Like Tom Bombadil. Get rid of him.
Yeah.
Because as much as people say, oh, yeah, you miss him out, imagine that movie does not need... a 30-minute scene with a dude singing.
Yeah.
I
read an article this week, I'm almost slagging off the Hobbit movies by talking about all the things they left out or changed from the books.
Yeah.
And almost all of them, I was nodding, thinking, yeah, I can see exactly why they changed that, or why they left that out, or why they reintroduced this character. You know, it's a different medium.
And that's the thing, like, you're always going to get the people who are just like, I can't believe you've done this, and like so attached to the source material but you just have to completely separate yourself.
And I think comic book fans have learned to deal with that with regards to the Marvel comics. They've changed so much and they've left so much out, but they work as films.
I guess the difference is there's trust with Marvel where we don't trust filmmakers over time.
Yeah. That's the thing.
Yeah.
I'm excited for the Splinter Cell movie as well. I really loved Edge of Tomorrow.
Yeah.
And Tom Hardy, and it's just a cool premise for a cool movie.
Yeah,
you know, it's another Mission Impossible style Bourne film.
Like,
it's almost easier
a cool secret agent movie.
Yeah, it's almost easier to make that kind of film, isn't it?
Because it's drawing on a lot of film inspirations in the first place as a series.
Assassin's Creed and Splinter Cell are both supposed to be out next year. They're clearly not coming out next year at this point. So it's kind of weird the way they've just quietly slipped.
Yeah, they should just
concerning. Anyway. Let's talk about something else. I've got a bit of a news story that came up this week, which I thought we could discuss at length.
Pray tell, Christopher.
Well, the Wolfman is back.
Okay.
Deadline reports that Prisoner's writer Aaron Kosakowski is being courted to get the Wolfman howling again. His new take on the character will follow Kurtzman's Mummy reboot, which is supposed to be coming out June 2016, and will be the first movie out of the gate for Universal, unless you count Dracula Untold. And do we count Dracula Untold?
I think they've yet to like decide
whether they
one.
Have. Yeah,
because that was weird, wasn't it? Like, if you all like this film, then it is. But if not, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. We'll forget about it. That's kind of their attitude towards it. It can be if you like it.
It's quite wishy-washy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But recently, Universal did announce a project coming out April 21st, 2017, which is Untitled Universal Monster franchise movie. So we're thinking that could be a Wolfman reboot.
Okay.
So, is it too soon? We had a Wolfman not that long ago.
When was that? That was the Benicio del Toro one.
Yeah, I believe it was 2010. And so this would be 2017. Yeah. That's 7 years, which is... That's a fair... I mean, that's longer than Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Spider-Man was, what, 5 years? Between Spider-Man 3 and Amazing Spider-Man.
Okay.
So how long is too long? Can you reboot a movie a year later, two years later, a game?
Ugh.
Like... Because we all thought, I don't know, Spider-Man, the Amazing Spider-Man made a hell of a lot of money.
Yeah.
But I couldn't get excited about it. No. And look, it looks like that franchise is now faltering.
I think it's, even though they're making money, I feel like a lot of that is to do with, you know, Spider-Man is appealing. He's built up an audience and a level of interest around that character over many years, which the Raimi films only kind of heightened. But now I feel like even I'm a big Spider-Man fan. I used to love Spider-Man. And I'm not so interested in another film at all.
Like, but it's not just you. I mean, look at it. It's in chaos now, that franchise and those characters. They literally sounds like they don't know what they're doing. Is that a result of not waiting longer or not doing something that was sufficiently different from what they'd done previous?
I think it's the same. I think it's not doing so. I don't think it's a wait thing. I think one of the main things that people were criticizing about it was like, how we've only just had Spider-Man finished. Like, how can we have another one? But I think it's not doing something like sufficiently different, because like the first half of I quite liked Amazing Spider-Man.
Mm.
Like, I loved all the characters. Yeah, I thought the actors were perfectly cast.
I think Garfield's great.
Amazing, yeah. But... like, until like when Uncle Ben is still on screen, I'm just like,
you don't need to do that again.
You know what's happening?
Exactly. And I think all the stuff with his parents is ridiculous in those movies. Like,
really
just makes
bad.
No sense. Trying to like, that's almost you almost want to have the cake and eat it. They want to have continuity of the Raimi films, so many of the similar elements.
Yeah,
but also squeeze in lots of new stuff to distinguish it.
Yeah,
it's almost having both sides of it, which I feel like doesn't quite work.
Yeah, like all the sort of like secret agent-y stuff that his dad was doing.
Yeah.
And like, and also I can't get past the fact that his dad sounds exactly like Saw. Like, he sounds exactly like when he's talking, it's like it's really, really creepy to listen to. But yeah, like,
but also
I
with all those films, I feel like Spider-Man's enough, surely.
Yeah.
You don't need all this other stuff. Spider-Man in himself is a cool enough character. Why do you need all this crazy stuff around him?
Yeah.
And like you're saying, if you're doing something different, I think you're more justified in doing it so soon.
Definitely.
So you look at Ben Affleck's Batman. I look at what they're doing, and while I might have concerns about other aspects of that film, I look at him in the Batsuit and the treatment of that character, and I go, yeah, I'm ready for that Batman.
Yeah.
Mm. I've not seen that Batman on the big screen before. Mm. And it's sufficiently different to the world that Nolan did just a couple of years ago that I have no problem with it.
Yeah.
Seeing another Batman. Mm.
That's
so
the thing.
Soon.
I think there's so many scenes in the second, The Amazing Spider-Man that I just think, I've seen Tobey Maguire do this exact thing. I've seen this montage of him making the suits and like drawing it up. And it's
to
like,
do the origin
why do
again.
You need this?
Like, everyone is familiar enough. And even though it's not going to be carrying on from those films,
so
there's a break in continuity, you just play on the fact that everyone knows how Spider-Man became Spider-Man.
Yeah.
That his uncle died. You don't have to do the with great power again.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was quite interesting to see that there were some photos this week that leaked that suggest that we're going to see the origins of Batman in Batman v Superman a little bit. Which I'm quite surprised about.
Who doesn't know that?
Yeah, yeah. Just maybe what? Or Wayne's parents.
Great. That
scene
film's
again.
That's going to be 5 hours, isn't
but
it?
Who knows? You know,
it's
going to
be like the Das Boot of superhero films.
But you can't judge it, can you? Who knows if that's true or equal? Well, if there's photos, then who knows how it's going to play into the
what
film.
What of?
I didn't look at them because I'm sick and tired of seeing stuff from that film early.
Maybe. I guess it could be just like one flashback. But still... unnecessary.
Yeah, I don't need to walk down Crime Alley.
unless they're retconning the origin in some way, you know, like the original Keaton Batman were, I don't know, another villain did it. Do you know what I mean?
What did you think of that original, not the original, what do you think of that last Wolfman movie, though? Did you guys both see it?
I did, yeah.
Yeah?
I've not seen it.
Okay. Oh, I thought you might have caught that one.
It just put me off. Like, yeah. It's got really bad reviews and I never got around
to
seeing
it. Well, it obviously had a very troubled production, that film. We had one director.
Joe Johnson, isn't it?
Yeah, but it was Mark Romanek for a long time, and then he left the project way down the line. And so it was Joe Johnson directing someone else's film, pretty much. And with Romanek, who's a really dark, weird filmmaker, it would have been a different beast, I think. So I think Joe Johnson's much more, you know, kind of mainstream, more palatable, maybe his version. Mm. But it was just a bit of a mess, really.
Yeah, I just remember not really being able to follow what was going on and actually just not caring what was going on.
Yeah. And Del Toro was terrible as well. Yeah, like he's bad, I like him.
Was he cast just because he's a bit hairy?
Yeah, mainly. Well, no, it did seem like cool casting at the time. Did, no, he's such a cool actor. But man, he didn't nail that one.
No.
So is it not too soon then? Do we deserve a good one, as a good Wolfman movie?
It's definitely a good, you know, it's a cool concept. You can make good werewolf movies. I feel like it's just the starting point for anything you want to do.
Yeah.
Like you could do something cool. The harder thing with that movie is fitting it in with all the other machinery they're lining up at the same time for the other movies.
Yeah.
You're going to have a tone that's relatively consistent. So when you throw them together, there's probably, you know, they all say to a director, you need to hit this end point or include these three things to make it make sense. And it's like,
That's the thing.
The restrictions of that.
Like, that's the thing. The thing with this Dracula Untold thing is they obviously haven't got their house in order because they're just like, oh, maybe it's part of it, maybe it's not. Like the Avengers, I'm sure they knew exactly what's going to happen in Civil War when they were starting out. Like, there's a plan there. They need to have this plan in place.
Yeah, and it feels like there's more of a natural reason for those characters to get together.
Yeah.
These characters don't really have shared history.
No.
Now, going back to the Universal movies of the 1940s and 50s and stuff, they obviously did do mashups. They did, like, Frankenstein meets the Wolfman and so on. Because, for commercial reasons, they knew this character was bankable, knew that character was bankable.
Yeah.
No-brainer. Let's throw them together in one film.
And that's Monster Squad. That was one of my favourite films when I was a kid.
But that's why, like, you offset risk, because you basically trade upon things people like. And that's why we're having this discussion at all about reboots.
Yeah.
Is instead of, like, going off on a big, new, risky venture with a character nobody knows, you go, you know, a lot of people really like Spider-Man still, right?
Yeah.
Let's make another one then.
Yeah.
Because Hollywood wants to make good profit and it's relatively risk-averse.
Yeah.
So you go with known quantities.
And well, of course. I mean, I think it was touched upon in the podcast last week that I wasn't on. But, you know, I think you and I, Dan, both found it vaguely depressing that Bourne 4 and Toy Story 4 were announced, being that, you know, those were perfect trilogies, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, a lovely beginning, middle and end that really worked. And it's like, I want to see Lasseter and I want to see Greengrass telling new stories, you know?
Yeah.
I don't need to see that story again. And I've got no reason to believe they won't both be good movies.
Yeah.
They'll probably both be excellent.
Yeah. It's just, oh, really?
It's the same feeling that I guess most people have when they heard Toy Story 2 has been made and Toy Story 3. You're like, does it really?
Yeah.
But 4 just seems a weird one because it feels kind of unnatural.
But there was such completion to both of the third parts of both those series as well.
Yeah.
It was a full stop both times.
Yeah. It's almost the same frustration as like a Nintendo fan where you just like every year you think Nintendo at E3 are going to announce some like new character they've made. And it's like, no, it's another Zelda here. And it's like, I'll play it and I'll love it. But at the same time, you want something new, but it's such a risk.
I've said this on the podcast before. The way I always regard Nintendo games is I feel like they've made new characters all the time, but they offset the risk by making it Mario.
Yeah.
So, for instance, Super Mario Galaxy could have been
anything.
Hey, Gavin the Spaceman.
Yeah.
And it could have been a brand new platforming hero, and they're going, oh, it's a bit weird. Let's make it Mario.
Yeah.
And suddenly, it's innovative, less kind of dangerous.
I almost wish the word reboot hadn't entered
the idiom.
The lexicon, it's
such a dirty word, man.
It's reimagining as well.
Yeah. But it's rare that I hear prequel. Yeah. It's rare that I hear those words and get excited, you know? It can work sometimes, Nolan's Batman.
Yeah.
But more often than not, it's a bit like, RoboCop, Nightmare on Elm Street. It's like, it's just stuff being done not as well as it was first time around.
Yeah. Do you think a series has to run itself into the ground before it becomes vaguely appealing? The Batman series and the Schumacher years.
Yeah, and I think the Bond did a similar thing. You know, the last Brosnan movie was not great, and it was like time to take a break and come back with new ideas. Yeah. And
the
world's changed, new influences, like Bourne, obviously.
24 and Bourne. Like, they made Bond change.
Yeah.
It's doing it for the right reasons, I guess. Whereas with Spider-Man, it didn't feel like it was being done for the right reason. And this Universal thing just sounds a bit messy at the moment.
They're really forcing it.
Particularly because of, you know, all the Dracula stuff. Did that video go on the site of me and you talking about?
So, yeah.
Yeah, so we've had the discussion already about, like, just felt like they're flailing around a little bit. And they're waiting, a bit like kind of what I said that on the video. I got that sense when I talked to the people, Damon Lindelof and Ridley Scott, about Prometheus, where they just kept changing their minds about whether they want it to be connected or not.
Yeah.
I mean, the film was finished. You know what you think, but they wanted to see what people thought before they made grand statements about it. And it's like, that's not how this
that's
just
not,
works.
That's not a creative vision, is it? No. You obviously have no conviction in it. So why should an audience? Why should you ask audiences to sign up for the next 10 years and get into something?
Lindelof basically said to me, well, it's both. It's a prequel. You can imagine them going off and it leading to Alien, or you can imagine it going off leading to something else.
I don't want to imagine. I want you to tell me. It's literally your job.
And I think that's probably why the Marvel slate was so warmly received the other day. I know lots of people are like, make too many movies. Yeah, that's true. I can see that. But at least they're going, hey, we're doing this.
Yeah.
And we've got it planned out.
That's
we've
a good
even
point,
got
actually.
A logo.
Although, like, when I did see that slate, I think we talked about it briefly on the podcast, but there is a reason to make another Hulk film, and they haven't done it. Like, I don't understand
that. They made a creative
reason.
And, you know, everyone loved the Hulk after the Avengers.
Yeah.
They could have quite easily gone, yeah, let's make a Hulk film.
Yeah.
There's money to be made there. We've got Ruffalo on a contract. Yeah. Let's do it. And they've gone, no, because they've been burnt in the past, and they go, it doesn't serve the
scheme. And they spent years developing stories for all these characters. Obviously, Hulk, they haven't developed the story well enough to do it.
Yeah.
So, but they have with Black Panther, and it's like, yeah, there's real thought and care and attention going into this. And so there should be, because it's their cash cow.
Yeah. Like, but it's also the characters that they loved.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like Kevin Feige loves those characters.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying Avi Arad doesn't, because I think when he came to the office, he that bloody loves Spider-Man.
He does, yeah.
He really does. Like, definitely, he knows his stuff and he cares about it, but there is obviously other pressures at work with Sony or whatever, though, with Spider-Man, to like retain the rights or whatever.
So final question on this point, is the time right then for a Guardians of the Galaxy reboot? Or is it too soon?
Let's bring it.
All right, that was flippant. Okay, on to a bit of reader feedback. I think you have the first piece, Daniel.
What do I? First piece is from Kyle Barrett. Hey, Kyle.
Friend of the show.
The news of Jared Leto being rumoured to play the Joker in Suicide Squad movie has left me disappointed. Mm-hmm. I've always wanted to see an older Joker on screen, and I think that Michael Keaton would be great for the role. While the casting of Keaton could be seen as stunt casting, I think he would bring a whole new form of crazy to the role. He does good crazy.
Yeah.
That's his thing. We've seen this in Beetlejuice, and even his Batman was delightfully unhinged. Do you think that introducing the Joker in a Suicide Squad movie is a good idea?
I do.
So two things, though.
Yeah.
What do we think of Michael Keaton? Mm. Do you think that would be stunt casting, or would you like to see that as a kind of a nice...
I would say yes to both of those questions. I think it's slightly stunty, but also he would be an amazing Joker.
Mm.
I'd never even thought of that.
No, I haven't. He looks good in white face makeup as well.
We'll have to talk about that on the superhero show this week as well.
So introducing the Joker in a Suicide Squad movie. So if you listen to some of the reports, in the first draft, he wasn't included.
Yeah.
And now he might be along with Harley Quinn.
Okay.
I was thinking about the Suicide Squad movie the other day as a concept.
Mm.
And, you know, DC and Warner are fast-tracking a DC cinematic universe. And one of the problems with that is a lot of the first wave of superhero movies suffered from a structural problem where it was like, here's the hero, here's the villain, third act, have a fight.
Yeah.
And you don't want all your movies to feel like that, because the Marvel movies of late have moved away from that template. They've got a bigger story on the go.
Yeah.
So if you can introduce all your villains in one movie before you get onto all your individual movies, it means you save a lot of time in those movies down the line. So when you come around to doing an Aquaman movie, his villain has already been introduced to audiences.
That's actually a really good point, yeah.
So the Aquaman film can be entirely about him, and there's no kind of flab to it. That's my pet theory, anyway.
Yeah.
And
it's
been
almost
two,
a tactical one.
And there have been two very good Joker movies already released, so maybe it would be interesting to see him in a smaller role, a supporting role, next time out. You know, he's obviously not going to play a big part in Batman v Superman, so I like that idea, but... Is he a character you can contain?
Yeah. That's the whole... Yeah, can he be just a bit part play? Will he detract from everyone else in that movie?
Maybe it'll be like Harley Quinn doing his bidding, and then he'll get revealed sort of almost towards the end.
But it's a powerful character, and you know, if Superman and Batman are box office, Joker's box office
definitely,
in his own
right.
And if you've got a film called Suicide Squad, people might be like, I don't even know what that is. Hey, it's got the Joker in.
All right. Yeah.
It's almost like a backhanded Batman hook, innit?
Yeah, I guess so.
I don't know if Batman has a backhanded.
And what do you think about Jared Leto? I know, again, we're going to talk about this on the Superhero Show.
I think
but
Gav has some strong opinions on Jared Leto.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah, I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan of almost anything that he's done.
That's less florid language than you used the other day.
It is, yeah. I don't know. I'm just not a fan of him. I'm not a fan of his work. I don't know. He rubs me up the wrong way.
Mm. He's a bit young.
He is really young. And I just
play alongside Affleck's. They're probably not that.
I think it's his
similar.
Band. I think it's the band
young.
That he's in.
This is what I was saying to Rich, actually, that I think because I dislike that band so intensely, yeah. And his, you know, when I hear him talking, he seems quite pretentious.
Massively.
But, like, he doesn't do a lot of acting now, but when he does, like, the things I think of are Requiem for a Dream and Dallas Buyers Club.
Yeah.
I thought he was really good in both those movies. And there is something slightly off and otherworldly and oddball about him.
He's exactly the same age as Affleck as well.
I think that could work for the character. He takes the acting very seriously.
Yeah.
We were talking about Batman the other day and how there's been so many different Batmans. The same thing for the Joker. Like, yeah. It's there to be do something different with it, distinguish it. It'll be.
I don't think he will though. I think this point this guy's made about having like an older Joker, I think that is the cool way of doing about it.
Well, then I'd cast Mark Hamill.
Yeah.
He's back.
Like the trickster.
Yeah.
Interesting. I guess we'll have to see how this one pans out, but it's sounding like he's the firm favourite at the moment, yeah. As he was for Doctor Strange for a while.
Yeah.
So, but he only does like one film every two or three years.
Yeah,
so.
Whereas this, you think, would be a big contract.
Mm.
Well, if it's not him, who do you think it could be then? Because Gosling was on the list apparently, and I don't see that at all.
No, I feel like they want cool casting for it.
Yeah.
Whereas I don't really care so much.
Mm.
Like, just get who's good. Yeah, but I think they do want a name in that role.
Just get someone. Why don't we just do good. Things that are really good?
Yeah, right? Yeah, but he's famous. I don't care. Yeah.
See, and also, the thing we're going to get to soon, just thinking about this, is that a lot of the good young actors have already played iconic superheroes.
Yeah.
So like, I'm thinking Tom Hardy, but he's already done a supervillain.
Yeah.
Cillian Murphy, he's already done a villain. Like, some of the cool people, like, with there being 6-7 films coming out a year now, yeah. a lot of the best actors out there, Cumberbatch will have done something sooner or later. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Well, it's already happened in a major way one time already with Chris Evans.
Yeah.
Mm.
He was Johnny Storm. And, like, good on Marvel for not letting that influence their decision, because I think he's turned out to be a great Captain America.
Ryan Reynolds has done a couple.
Yeah.
Mm.
Maybe not him.
That is a good point, though, because you forget, like, because you almost forget that Chris Evans is in Fantastic Four.
And he was
like,
really good in that role as well, playing the cocky. Right, yeah. Like, he's a good actor, Chris Evans.
He was really good
credit
in...
he deserves Sunshine.
I really liked another comic adaptation, The Losers.
Like, yeah, he was in that one. I was going to say, he did another one,
didn't
he? And
he was really good in that as well, yeah. And Scott Pilgrim, I guess, as well.
He's really good, isn't he? I just think, Chris Evans is really good.
I like Chris Evans, and he taught the cast of Scott Pilgrim how to high five without missing. Because he's a jock. That's what they were telling me, I remember, when I went on set
he's
that
a
one.
Cool guy.
Really? You went on set at Scott Pilgrim?
Mm.
Oh, I'm jealous of that. That's awesome.
Mm. all right, on to the next piece of feedback. I've got a couple of pieces here from the same person. I just like them because they were a bit weird. I don't know how to pronounce this name. Tihis Van Cisse. His first piece, I guess, refers to last week's podcast, which I didn't listen to. So apologies, Gav. Mm-hmm. He says, Duck Hunt, last podcast you spoke of the 3D food printer. One of you had a throwaway comment saying Americans will love that. No. Hell to the no. Our food is already terrible enough. I have no desire to try any of that food, especially 3D salad. So, yeah, is there a 3D food printer? I didn't know this.
Yeah, apparently there's a 3D food printer and you can print pizzas with it. That was a story that we run on IGN.
Really?
About it, yeah.
What has happened to this website?
But yeah, no, it looks absolutely foul. And I think it was me that said Americans will love that, so I'm really sorry.
It's probably nicer, though, than those weird microwave burgers that Rory's been eating for lunch.
Is that who's been eating them? Because there's always one in the fridge.
Yeah, he's buying them for a quid.
When he first... he used to buy a bag of donuts a day.
Did he? We need to saw him.
He's well American.
Yeah, he had his. We said today in the meeting, no, he had his like baseball hat on backwards today.
He's not here to defend himself.
Yeah, good.
But we like his American ways. And then a second email. It says a little topic about James Bond. You spoke about him being sure to win, which is always the case in each and every movie. I wonder if you guys would like to see a movie where he loses. No. I like that though.
But then he never, like with the Daniel Craig ones, he never really seems like he wins.
I was going to say, Casino Royale is what I was going to say.
He goes to crap at the end, doesn't it? Really?
Yeah. It's never fun at the end. He's never like, as he goes away.
Yeah.
Like,
he's not Roger Moore. He's not.
Yeah. Very often, the women he's with just dying.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think he's losing more and more. We do see a sad. Mm. I mean, if he completely lost, I think. It would be a weird feeling coming out of the cinema having watched
a bit of a downer.
Where the villains destroyed the world or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think you could almost do it. I think maybe like event at the end of, because the thing that I hate is like in all of the Avengers trailers, there's always this like that bit, you know, the sort of third act where they go like these characters have hit rock bottom,
yeah, the world's
like,
against the torn apart.
Yeah, exactly. But then at the end, they're like, no, we're band together and we're gonna win. Like,
well, I feel that the Avengers approach in a moment where the Marvel Universe, somebody's gonna die.
Yeah,
like, and that's gonna be really cool. And
well, I thought it was gonna be Downey Jr. for ages.
And like, for a generation of kids, that's gonna be like, I am your father moment.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I think that's how you do it. I mean, Star Wars did it, and or you do it when it's a two-parter, which we've got a few two-parters coming up. That's where you can have a depressing ending, because Star Wars proved that you could do it.
Yeah.
And people waited 3 years that time.
Yeah. It's getting to the point where they're releasing 2 and then 3 years. Like, every film can be a cliffhanger for the next one if they wanted to. It's not just the ones that are part one and two. They could do it from Civil War to Black Panther, because that character goes across.
Because none of us can remember what it's like, because I'm the eldest here, and I was too young. But can you imagine what it was like having to wait? You know, we've always been alive. Yeah. There's been 3 Star Wars movies you could watch, so you could just watch Empire and then return. But if you had to wait 3 years, it ended up on that Debbie Downer, and then you had 3 years to wait to find out what the bloody hell was going to happen, that must have been an absolute killer.
Yeah. I almost don't trust any time a character dies, though. It's like, especially in the Marvel films, like, you'll see Samuel Jackson, has he died there? No, he hasn't. No, he hasn't died.
That's a character from the comic books, though, isn't it?
Because no one ever really dies in the comics. But I feel like they will, because of just practical reasons, that the contracts will run out.
But then, like, when they killed off Phil in Avengers,
and you're just that was a bit weak.
Because so
that's the motivation. That's what brings them together as a team.
Exactly, and it's such a big thing. And I was like, oh my goodness, that's amazing. No, he's back.
Yeah.
Disappointing.
Yeah, I don't know why he's back, because I haven't watched any S.H.I.E.L.D., any agents for S.H.I.E.L.D., so I don't know. Apparently there's a good reason for why.
Apparently season 2 is really good.
I'm not going to watch a season of bullshit to get to
just
something good,
then.
Though.
Skip.
I think, Gav, you have some competition winners, don't you?
Yes, we do, yeah. So we had quite a lot of entries into the Mario Kart competition to win a bunch of stuff.
What was the question? Wasn't it Gavin. Which character?
What character would you like to be added to Mario Kart?
I've got the answer for me. I could have jeopardied that.
Professional.
Yeah, there was quite a lot. I looked like a kid then at school, like, my homework. So we had quite a lot of really, really good entries. So a bunch of people won hats and stuff. 20 people won hats and stuff.
Mario and Luigi hats, we should add.
Yeah, not just hats. Hats we've made. Some other people won some merchandise, including hats, and also some eShop vouchers. One person won a Wii U with a bunch of cool stuff in it. So I'll read out some of the runners-up. Owen Deadman, which is a pretty amazing name.
What a badass. Is he a cowboy?
I'll ask him. I've got his email address now. Hi, for my entry to the competition, I'd like to see a water on the back of a craft that randomly changes between the various consoles Nintendo has released over the years.
That's cool.
That is cool, isn't it? Because, like, they release, like, I don't know if you're still playing Street Pass stuff, but when you unlock, like, a console and you wear it as a hat, like, I'm always like, oh, yeah, remember that? Like, that would be pretty cool. The twist being that the consoles handle based on their success, so the SNES and Wii are just great and zip along, but the GameCube is sluggish and slow, and the Wii U is just dug in the ground so you can't even see it. Hope they use my idea of future DLC, Duck Hunt and Out. I quite like that. It's a cool little one, isn't it?
I still like the fact that he's ragged on the Wii U, but entered the competition to win
To win
one.
A Wii U. But he hasn't won it, so... yeah.
Sorry, apologies.
Adam Quayne says, Duck Hunt, hello, big fan. I'd love to see the Pokemon trainer because of the exciting uses of his Pokemon. They could be used as weapons, or they themselves could simply be item replacements. For example, Pikachu could electrify a cart and it would shrink, or Tentacruel could ink the player's screen. The possibilities are endless. I quite like that idea. Like,
variety.
Yeah. But the winner is Chris Wilkes. And you like this one. Yay. He says, hi guys, I'd love to see the Technodrome from the 90s Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game. It would be great to see the massive vehicle chugging around the track and squashing Mario and Peach. Will be great. Keep up the good work.
Nice.
That's what he thinks. Yeah.
Thinking outside the box there.
Exactly, yeah.
Congratulations, really, really Chris. Yeah.
Well done. We've got something else to give away this week. It has come out, it's one of the games that's out. It's World of Warcraft Warlords of Draenor Collector's Edition. So you get the game. I don't know why World of Warcraft still releasing box copies of stuff, but people seem to really, really like it. But you get the game and a load of amazing, I don't know, DVDs, probably a mouse mat, I don't know, some stuff like that. There's loads in there, and it's actually
sell it, Gav. Yeah, sell it.
I don't have to sell it. But there's loads of. If you're a World of Warcraft fan, you'll know exactly why this is amazing. But it's in a really nice box. But to win it, we thought we'd ask you guys what. who you would like to see cast if they were to make a StarCraft movie and in what role. So send in your best answer to that and the best one will win this.
UK only?
I don't know. I guess so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go for it.
I don't know what the rules are. This is my third podcast.
Let's say UK only.
Okay.
Because we're cheap on postage. And Gav's going to have to pay for it.
Yeah, unless you live in the US and you're visiting anytime soon, you can come pick it up.
He would shop it around.
Yeah.
That is UK only. Right, let's talk about what is hitting shelves and screens and steams this week.
You sound like my dad talking about things. Well, your steams.
And your iTunes and your tablets. So games.
Yes.
The aforementioned World of Warcraft Warlords of Draenor.
Yep. Any good?
I don't know. I don't really play World of Warcraft.
Yes, well, good.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. As long
as giving it away.
As long as you're asking any follow-up questions, it is well good.
Excellent.
For lots of reasons. PES, probably the Pro Evolution Soccer 2015. We don't have a review yet. Mm-hmm. Other websites do.
Yeah.
But the online component of the game, which is quite substantial, hasn't been switched on yet, so we don't have a review. But me and Alex have been playing it. It's great.
Apparently it's amazing, yeah.
I like it more than FIFA this year. It's really fast and fun.
That's massive.
Yeah, it's really, really good. It's awesome.
Does that mean we need to get Craig Robertson? He's PES, isn't he?
Yeah,
he
loves PES, yeah.
Okay, we'll get
just
Craig
get him in anyway.
We're from the exact same village, me and him. We
excellent.
In the same place, yeah.
Well, we'll get, he's friend of the show, friend of the podcast. Yeah. I will drop him a line.
Has he not gone on all Hollywood yet?
Massively.
He was filming a Hollywood movie in Mysacoma, where we both grew up the other day, because my mum told me about it. Yeah.
Really? Well, he's directed it's his directorial
debut. He's
directed
debut.
It, yeah. He's written directed it. He's only 12 as well. It's unbelievable.
I watched his Amazon Prime, the David Gordon Green thing. It's amazing. Mm. It's such a good pilot. And it was one of those things where I watched it. I was like, this is a perfect show. I really want to watch this. Mm. When's the next day? Oh, buffer. Like, you can't watch it. You can't watch any more of it.
Oh, I hate it. He's precocious.
For PES. For
also, Assassin's Creed Rogue and Unity. We've discussed them already.
Yep.
And finally, Lego Batman 3, which we've also discussed.
How is it?
We don't have a review yet because we didn't get copies till later on. But from what I've heard, it's great.
Yeah.
If you love Lego games, you love DC, it's probably your ideal game.
I play quite a lot of it.
Lego games are like my comfort gaming. Like, if I was ever ill, I'd play a Lego game and I was stuck at home. Like,
yeah.
I feel that just... not too taxing, but really enjoyable and fun.
You can play
maybe with a lot of heart, I think.
Like, you can play them with kids. Like, I've got where I live, there's a lot of kids that come down to where I live. That sounds.
That,
whoa,
what?
No, no thanks. No,
and you live by the river.
No thanks.
All right, old man river.
I'm like green grass from Heartbeat.
Yeah.
But instead of a dog, I've got.
You can dispose of anything in that river.
I've got the latest Lego game.
But. Kids love those games.
Come on, sit on my game.
That wasn't worth it. That wasn't worth it for that point.
Kids do love the game, mate.
And kids love you.
Yeah.
Too much sometimes.
Films?
Let's talk about the film. So this week there's a documentary about Roger Ebert, which I haven't seen, but which is apparently fantastic.
Yeah, looks really good.
If you don't know who Roger Ebert is, he's kind of probably the most popular, most read American film critic of the last 30 years, and he sadly passed away about, I don't know, a year ago. The reason I haven't seen this is it's loosely based on his autobiography, and I really want to read that. Apparently that's a great read, but he was an incredible guy. Well worth checking out, although it's only in limited release. The Drop is out this week, which I'm really annoyed I haven't seen. We reviewed it a little while back, though, and we loved it. It's James Gandolfini's last performance.
Yeah.
And it sounds like it's a worthy film.
It's got a really good dog in there.
A dog, yeah. It's Tom Hardy and a puppy.
Yeah. Rocco the puppy.
And Noomi Rapace.
Have you seen it?
I haven't. Oh. But I've seen a featurette on the dog.
Don't need anything more.
We gave it 8 out of 10 and said... Tom Hardy shines in The Drop, a solid crime drama about small-time hoods, lost souls, and an abused puppy. So that's well worth checking out by all accounts, and I probably will if I get the time.
Yeah.
The Imitation Game is out this week, which I have seen and really, really enjoyed. I heard some negative things about it, and there was the odd problem I had with it, but people were saying it was just a boring, straightforward kind of biography. It's biopic. I found it much more interesting than that. It's a really interesting character study of a really interesting guy who effectively won us the war and invented the computer, and yet he's rarely talked about.
Yeah.
And he died. He was arrested for being homosexual and committed suicide based on the drugs they were trying to chemically castrate him. So it's a really tragic end. And it was only... He was in the news, people probably know, from a couple of years ago, because he was finally posthumously pardoned.
Yeah.
But really amazing Cumberbatch performance. Really, really great movie. And then the big one this week, Nativity 3, Dude,
Jesus
Where's My Donkey?
Christ. I had to watch a trailer the other day for this, and I watched it, and like, it looks like such a poorly made film, as in just like technically, like the what it actually looks like. I've made things that look better than that. Like, it looks like someone's filmed it on their iPhone in some bits.
Yeah, like, a big plot point is like her ex, what the girl, Catherine Tate, her ex organises flash mobs. And so she's getting married in New York. He travels to New York and there's loads of flash mobs in the movie. It's like, really?
That's her job. Thing is, like, I really, really, really liked Catherine Tate in The American Office. Like, I was never a huge fan of her.
She's
like,
a good actress. Character.
She's really, really good in The American Office. Yeah. And then, what's she up to? What's she doing here with Martin Clunes?
Money.
Yeah.
And of course, Dude, Where's My Donkey? Why wouldn't you want to see that?
It's awful. I think that there's like one of the big things, one of the big plot points is like Martin Clunes loses his memory and forgets where this guy's donkey is. So his little psychic, they're actually looking for a donkey.
Yeah.
Like, in it. Like,
I don't know. Actually, the more I think about it, the more I'm slightly wanting to see it.
No. From what I can see, a lot of it takes place in shopping centres.
Don't have to get a filming permit.
So if you see one film this week, I recommend The Imitation Game. And if that's sold out, go check out The Drop. What about you, Dan? Is there a game? It's quite a few good ones, isn't it?
Loads of them. Any of them?
Yeah.
Any of them.
All the big games.
It's a good week in entertainment.
Ooh. All round. Apart from Nativity 3, Dude, Where's My Donkey? That came out as well.
Okay, I'll cross that one off.
Yeah.
So great. Thank you for joining me, lads. And thank you guys for listening and watching. And we will be back, same bat time, same bat channel next week.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.